in the year since we've spoken, public awareness about microplastics seems to have skyrocketed. Has this made any difference in what you're seeing on the research end in terms of environmental damage?
Oh, absolutely. I think, as you said, in the last 1 year, there has been so much, and certainly lots of new areas that have been opened, and the one that you just mentioned is a very interesting one. But I think there is now larger awareness, even within the scientific community, you know, especially to do with the fate and transport of microplastics. So it's a fascinating topic, and it's one that is also very, very challenging, because everywhere we look, we find. And we find microplastics, but even when we find more than we expected. So that's actually quite alarming to some extent, because usually scientists were used to trying to track something and not finding enough of it. But with microplastics, we've got the jackpot here, because everywhere we look, we find. Now, the significance of this research, you know, I mean, it's not a surprise. I can tell you that, you know, whether microplastics will make it through the food chain or the food web, depending on what people like to call it, but it's about the same. So you have the primary producers, you have basically shrimp-like, you know, prawn-like organisms called zooplankton that can basically take up microplastics, even the nanoparticles, because now we're talking about the picoparticles, the nanoparticles, really, really tiny particles. And lots of people were saying, oh, because they're tiny enough, they can't make it into the animals or into humans. And we discovered that it's not the case. And I tell you why, because the big animals eat small animals who eat smaller animals. So, you know, that is, there is the process of basically food web processes, which is a bottom-up process. So it goes from the bottom all the way to the top. So I can guarantee you most definitely that any microplastic that is available in the ocean, even if it's very tiny, will make it all the way to the top predators through their food. So there is absolutely no doubt about that, because microplastics fit perfectly you know, in the profile of a pollutant, and they fit within what we call a persistent pollutant. So whether they're tiny or large doesn't really matter. It's just a matter of time. Now, you may remember last year I said, you know, we don't know much about how these things get transported into the environment and whether they're going to end up in my brain as a human. And I said to you last year, well, I don't care whether, you know, there will be an impact, but I'd rather not have microplastics in my brain. So now, you know, really big shock to lots of people. There has been an initial study in Austria, which showed that actually microplastics are found in human gut. And we're just embarking on a study here in Western Australia where we're looking at a database of basically, you know, how do you call it? Database of poo, essentially, of a study where people have followed different diets, and then we're going to track microplastics too, because this it's essentially possible to find microplastics in human guts. Now, from human guts, where does it go? Well, like anything that gets into our system, it's likely that it ends up in our circulation. And if it ends up in our circulation, it's likely to go somewhere. Now, the fear about the fact that microplastic may make it into a human brain or animal brain or whatever, that is not, you know, sort of a crazy idea. It's just completely possible. And it's predictable and logical. When you have a pollutant, it will end up in this. Now, we fear that if it ends up in the nervous system, that, you know, the nervous system doesn't like necessarily particles, right? And that could have damaging effect. And I think lots of people are worried that if that's the case, then we need to do something more than what we are doing at the moment. But certainly what I'm seeing in general in the scientific, and also as a scientist, but also as an editor, we're getting lots of investigations that are opening up lots of new areas, and I think there is more public awareness. So these are all good things, but sadly, the issue is actually quite, significant.
Absolutely. Now,
just one last one. For the United Nations to come out and for lots of countries to come out and say, hey, microplastics or plastic pollution is actually a serious, urgent, international matter, that is actually not a light thing. Those decisions don't get made lightly.
Absolutely. And it is fantastic that it has been such a global focus recently with the UN announcing that. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, you said you when you started researching about microplastics, you weren't surprised that it started to be ingested and coming up the food chain. But the results that came from Harriet Watt University said that there was a glue-like substance produced by bacteria and that was making the plastic like larger clumps. Were you surprised that is how it made it way into the food chain?
No, I'm not. And I'll tell you what, because these are phenomena that's unknown, for all sorts of other particles. So I think the researchers who went after this investigation, they knew that this happens and it's likely to happen because, again, there's a whole sort of raft of things that bacteria do to particles or to any other thing that they deal with. That is not a surprise. Now, why is that particular for plastic? It could well be that it's not necessarily the plastic itself, but it's what coats. Because, we found that lots of microplastics in the ocean in particular, they attract some growth and also some pathogen-like organisms. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there's some microscopic film that builds on those particles. And it may well be that the bacteria have interest in that. You know what I mean? Because the bacteria, bacteria are extremely good. They are our friends.
Mm.
But they can do anything, right? Mm. Bacteria can absolutely do anything. They actually can dissolve the rock.
Wow.
It's crazy what bacteria can do.
A very, very intimidating friend.
Oh, it's very intimidating. But, once one of my students asked me the question, what would you take to an island? If you take one thing to an island, the question, people say, I'll take my playlist, I take my phone, I say, no, I take bacteria. Bacteria are our best friends. I can't tell you what. Because we couldn't live without them. They are everywhere. They are deep into the vent. They are in extreme environment. And the reason being is that they are able to do whatever they want in terms of dissolving the chemistry, in terms of aggregation, which is the case here. There's some process by which, the growth will aggregate in a, that's a strategy that organisms use to basically concentrate a nutrient in one place. So there could be a number of reasons, but this is actually fascinating. Now, to say that that's the only pathway into larger animals is not true, because the pathway to larger animals can be smaller animals. That's well known. And also because they are filter feeders who can actually filter feed very tiny particles and accumulate them. That's the way they eat, like big whales that are filter feeders as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when they get the water, they get all the plankton that's in it, and they basically essentially sieve the water out and keep the particles. So that is a perfect system for basically collecting. It's a filter. It's like a plankton filter, essentially, for collecting microplastics. So if someone dared to look in Wales, I would encourage researchers who are in this area to look at, whenever there's an incident and a carcass of whale, to look at microplastics. I'm sure they were fine.
That's very interesting. There's absolutely more than one way. Now, looking at a societal kind of view of this, would you say that it is equally the consumer and producer's responsibility to help this issue, or do you think that the consumers hold the power here?
It's absolutely everyone. I think certainly you're absolutely right. The consumers are well positioned. But, where it's actually fascinating is that, we only see the big plastics and the big things. But when you look in detail of where plastics are in our lives, it's everywhere.
Everywhere
you look, you found that there are things that are made of plastic, microfiber, our clothes, our, active wear that people like to go to brunch with,
The cucumbers in the supermarket, they're always wrapped in plastic.
Everything. And I think the good thing for me is that there is an awareness.
Mm.
That's the first step. The second step is now to look at what are the plastics that we have on the market and look at reducing the ones that we can reduce. Now, the good thing as well is that we can actually tell which microplastics comes from where, because with our technology, we can basically vaporize the particle, even if it's a nanoparticle, and we can track the profile of it. So we can say which plastic. We can almost track it back to the company, right?
Right.
And that's really important, because then the plastics that are more prevalent, or we find more, then we can say, well, hold on, there is a high risk there, then we don't want these plastics in the market or in circulation.
Mm, absolutely.
And this is like basically a regulatory issue, is that, if you give you an analogy, is that when we added lead to petrol, it was a great thing because it made the engine work better, but we discovered that lead was single most responsible for lots of pollutants and lots of toxic issues for humans and animals. We said no lead anymore. Boom.
Mm.
And leaded petrol made it in there. And you can track the lead concentration in the environment. After the ban, it went it went down all the way. There are still issues because there are lots of countries that are not into the lead. But imagine if you apply the same analogy to microplastics. You can say, well, if we identify the bad boys of microplastics, then that's the first step. And I think that's where lots of regulatory process